Our true crime podcast deals with sensitive issues, including some that little ears shouldn't hear. Listener discretion is advised.
This is Cam.
And I'm Jen.
And you're listening to
Our True Crime Podcast.
That's horrible.
That's true.
So strange.
Usually.
I can't imagine what that's like.
Do you want to?
That could never happen to me.
It might.
Lock him away. He's pure evil. Or insane.
Or human. My name's Kate. I have worked as a forensic psychologist, as well as in prisons and as a crisis clinician. My job was to figure out who gets locked up and who gets a key. To find the humanity in inhumane situations. So, are you sure you really want to know?
Yeah. Maybe.
Because by the end of the episodes, you just might end up thinking,
I felt better before I knew that.
You can find me at IWB Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, sometimes Instagram, or you can email me at iwbpodcast@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Christy, one of the hosts of Heartland Homicide, a true crime podcast. My co-host Kaysen and I focus on cases from the heartland of the U.S. You can find us on iTunes, Podbean, and most major podcast platforms. We explore some well-known and some not-so-well-known cases close to us. We are on social media at Heartland Homicide on Facebook and on Twitter at HRTLND Homicide. And while these cases may not be Florida crazy, they are cornfield crazy.
Kids are back to school. It's in full swing.
I'm so ready for fall. I can't even. We had one inkling of what it is going to be like, and I can't wait.
I know, with the cool weather.
Yes.
The only problem is I've been having to help the girls with homework, or the youngest one with homework, and it's math homework.
My kids pass me in homework skills at about third grade.
Oh, so. The math homework, the hardest part. Thank goodness my husband is like super duper math smart.
My son's in a math class, and I had to ask him like what. Of course, you and I never made it near that high. So then he's like, well, Mom, think about doing this. And I said, I never made it that far. Sine and cosine or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I made it to high school. I made it to algebra.
Did you pass it?
With the help of the freshmen that were in the class? Yes.
I didn't pass it.
Yeah.
Oh, well. I told my own students that, and they're like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
But I can write a 20-page term paper in about 20 minutes.
Yep. Boop, boop. I know. Anyway, I'm just glad everybody's back.
You have your podcast time left?
I have podcast time left. I can listen to all my podcasts now.
I like that. So speaking of that, what kind of case you got for us?
I've got an old case.
Okay.
Don't worry, it's been solved.
Oh, good.
Or should I even tell you it's been solved?
I don't.
Sometimes I think you'll know. You'll know.
It's okay.
It's pretty early.
Well, are you going to let me hear it?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Buckle your seatbelts, little podsters.
OTC podsters.
Here we go. Debbie Gamma was a student at Strong Vincent High School in Erie, Pennsylvania. And she had had an argument with her mother, Betty, mm-hmm. on the morning of August 7th, 1975. Debbie was so angry, she stormed out of her West 10th Street home. Apparently, she was headed for the beach. And like all these stories start out, she never returned.
Oh, I was going to go a different direction.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, she just never returned. Her mother, Betty, thought maybe Debbie ran away. They started calling everybody that they knew.
Mm-hmm.
She never turned up. And, you know, Betty recalls that Debbie was pretty much her life and that Betty's life didn't really begin until Debbie was born. Her mom said that when Debbie was born, she felt a closeness to somebody that she had never felt before. And even though Betty and her husband had four other children, Debbie and her just shared a special bond.
Was she the only daughter?
Didn't say.
Debbie was her favorite.
Well, just firstborn. So there is a special bond with your firstborn.
Yeah.
You know? Debbie's mom said Debbie loved life. Guess what she was? She was a baton twirler, and she actually did double batons.
Oh.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
To dream. I would have been so jealous back when I was 7. Just everybody was excited because she was a majorette and doing the whole rigmarole. It was probably quite glamorous.
Oh, yeah.
I would think. I still think that's glamorous. But anyway, on August 12th.
Maybe you should look into taking some classes.
I have a baton. I still have a baton.
I think maybe you should.
Maybe.
Maybe. You know how they have the older women? Older
tap dancers?
Tap dancers, yes. Maybe we can start a new baton twirling one.
Wouldn't that be fun? We could light the ends on fire.
Oh.
Twirl. We wouldn't have any eyebrows anymore.
Fire. I don't think so. That's a bad idea.
Oh, it would be fun. We should do that.
We should look into it. Think of a cute name. Okay, go ahead.
Geriatric baton twirlers.
No. The Jerrys.
The Jerrys. All right, so back to this. So on August 12th, the family received some devastating news.
Ugh.
Debbie's body had been found by a woodchuck hunter in Kesawego Creek. That's off Route 98, about 12 miles north of Meadville in Crawford County. Her hands and ankles had been bound, and she had copper wire embedded around her neck. According to the coroner's report, 16-year-old Debbie Gamma had been raped, and the cause of death was acute asphyxiation due to ligature.
Ugh, that's terrible.
Months dragged by, and the police found few leads in the case. One day, Betty was reading the newspaper. There was an article about a rash of burglaries involving copper wire around her area.
Okay, so like copper wire
It's used in telephone systems, copper wire, stuff like that. She remembered that the police said that was used in Debbie's murder. Since Betty was getting aggravated about the police not being able to come up with clues, she hired her own investigator.
Mm-hmm.
So early in 1977, the PI she hired found a connection to a most unlikely suspect.
Mm-mm.
Debbie's favorite high school English teacher.
What?
Raymond Payne.
He did it?
Well, that's the connection.
How old was he?
He was 39 at the time.
And she's 16?
She was 16.
Ugh.
One investigator, I liked this, one investigator described Payne as no Clark Gable, but no Hunchback of Notre Dame either. Nice, huh? Yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah, okay.
Like the movie book reference.
Like exactly. That. So after several months, police finally got around to questioning a man that had been involved in theft of a similar type wire in mm-hmm. the area. And that man told him that Payne had planned the theft, and the man actually even led them to Payne's property where spools of this copper wire was found.
So this guy was a school teacher, and then he burglarized stuff on the side?
That's what was claimed.
Oh.
So they tested the wire, and it was confirmed that it was the same wire that was mm-hmm. around Debbie's neck. Even though the wire was found in Payne's residence, Payne continued to teach at Strong Vincent High School for the entire 75-76 school year while he was being investigated.
I'm surprised they didn't put him on leave.
Remind me that you said that, okay?
Ugh.
They arrested him in September of 76, the following year. That's 413 days after Debbie's body was found. Okay. Payne did confess.
To killing her?
Murdering Debbie when his attorney was present, but then a few days later said that it was an accident.
He recanted. Of course.
Well, he didn't recant. He just said it was an accident.
Oh, it was an accident.
In a police statement.
Was it an accident that she got copper wires tying up her hands and stuff too?
I don't know.
Okay.
In a police statement, Payne said he saw Debbie Gamma as she was standing on the corner of 10th and Raspberry Street. Payne said he talked her into getting into his truck and going for a ride. Payne stated he'd been smoking marijuana and had taken two downs, which actually was...
Downers?
Meprobamate?
Downer?
It's kind of like a barbiturate,
okay. Mm-hmm,
but they called it downs.
Oh, okay.
And it's in quotation marks, too, so... Who knows? I'm not a big...
Well, if you need to refer to our excellent pill identification, you can refer to one of our earlier episodes.
Right, exactly.
Yes, the Facebook killer episode. Mm-hmm.
He had taken two of these barbiturate-type pills prior to picking up Debbie. Payne then claimed that Debbie voluntarily took a number of pills that he had offered her. So the same kind of pills. Some Ugh. Downers. Payne then claimed Debbie agreed to pose for Payne for sex pictures. Then after the sex pictures, he then asked her if she would take some bondage pictures.
Oh.
Okay, my question is, What 16-year-old...
with your teacher.
...would do that? At 16, I didn't even want to change in gym.
I think he's a big...
Right?
His pants are on fire.
And this is his statement, remember. Payne said that Debbie agreed to do all this. He then took her... They smoked marijuana as he drove her out to a secluded area in Everett C. Hall Community Park in the Waterford Township in Erie County.
This is where his photography session was going to
take
place.
This is where it was
going
to... In the woods. Of course in the woods.
Why, of course it is.
You know, mm-hmm. Can't do it at mom's house. So after arriving to the spot in the woods, Payne said that Debbie allowed him to tie her hands and ankles together with some clothesline he had purchased at Kmart.
Mm-hmm.
Must have just had it in his truck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No premeditation.
No, anything. I always keep clothesline
right?
in
right? Totally.
Totally. Payne then had Debbie get down on her knees. He then tied the end of one rope to a tree, wound it around her neck, and then tied the other end to a tree.
What?
Yeah. So I don't know if he hogtied her and then...
Like she was suspended in the air?
No, she wasn't suspended in the air, but she was tied to two trees by her neck.
Oh, okay.
While she's on her hands and knees.
Okay.
After she was all tied up, Payne said, I left my camera in the truck.
Oh, darn it. Here, you just stay right here. I'll be right back.
Who likes a photographer that's not prepared? Even though he could tell the pills were starting to take effect in Debbie,
mm-hmm.
he still... left Debbie in the trussed up position and went to his truck. So while he was at the truck,
mm-hmm.
he smoked some more marijuana and loaded his camera. By the time he got back to where he left Debbie, he discovered that Debbie had fallen forward and died, strangled herself. Payne then said he panicked.
Mm-hmm.
He cut the clothesline and placed Debbie's dead body in his truck and drove the truck back to his farm, which... his mother lived with him on the farm. Payne then stated he attached cement blocks to Debbie's body with copper wire and placed her in a pond that's located on his property. 2 days later, he discovered that Debbie's body had surfaced. So he then transported the body to the creek.
How many times do we have to go over this? Isn't there any point during all of this stuff going on that you think to yourself, maybe this is not such a good idea?
Let's say this happened as he said it did.
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather go to jail for an accidental death on manslaughter?
Yes.
Or try to hide the body and risk death penalty? You know, why wouldn't you just stop and say...
But he hid the body a couple times. That's what I'm saying. Isn't there some point in there that reason strikes you?
I mean, well, first of all, I would never drug
16-year-old?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Payne denied that he had had any sexual relations with Debbie or that he in any way molested her and her death was accidental. A trial was scheduled for Monday, April 11th, 1977, and when asked, Payne pleaded guilty to murder. The state went after first-degree murder charges, which states a criminal homicide is where a person intentionally, recklessly, negligently causes the death of another person.
Yes.
Payne's defense team didn't think he should have anything more than third degree. First degree is what I just mentioned. The murder in second degree is where the death of the victim occurred while the defendant was engaged as a principal or accomplice in the preparation of a felony.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is considered third degree, right? Mm-hmm. So Payne's attorney said he shouldn't. It was an accidental death. It should just be third degree murder, right?
Mm-hmm.
But during the trial, one of Payne's cellmates was brought in as a witness.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Anthony Lee Evans, and he was incarcerated along with Payne in the Erie County Prison in July and February of 1977 when he was first brought in.
Mm-hmm.
Evans testified that Payne's confided in him and eventually described in detail what had occurred. He said that Payne told him that while Payne and Debbie were riding in his truck, he had put some of the Downs pills in the victim's beer.
Oh, I knew that was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that while Debbie was under the influence of the drug, Payne took her into the woods where he tied her up in the manner that was described and started having sexual intercourse with Debbie.
And she was out of it.
When she was out of it. But not so out of it, because Evans said that Payne had told him that Debbie had begged him to stop and started crying and screaming.
And isn't that a point that you would, in fact, stop?
Well, most normal people would. Evan had actually said that Payne had told Evan Debbie had made him mad. So he grasped the rope on each side of her. Remember, it was wrapped around her neck and pulled until she was dead.
So he did murder her.
That's what Evans claimed that Payne told him. Now, at this point, Evans' testimony varies just a little bit from Payne's statement in that he testified that rather than taking the body back to the farm and placing it into the pond, that Payne said he covered the body with leaves and left it there for several days until he decided on what to do and how to dispose of it.
Was that true? Did they? Oh. See, so, again, what at what point do you think,
I know.
You know
what? Time do you
not a good idea.
Come to your senses, right. So Evans further testified that Payne told him Debbie's death was a culmination of sexual fantasy that he had been living with for a long time, and that he likes to tie women up and do crazy things to them. Now, although Payne's defense team tried to discredit Evans' testimonies, it corroborates the statement given by Payne in many ways. In both statements, Payne admits that Debbie was under the influence of pills, whether she took them willingly or unknowingly.
Or both.
Right.
Like, she could have been like, yeah, I'll take one, and then he put 12 in her drink,
right.
You know?
The reference to a sexual fantasy and Payne's penchant for bondage is important, for in Payne's own statement, he admits that he was the one that suggested taking bondage pictures. Even the manner in which Debbie was tied is exactly the same in Evan's statement and Payne's statement.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's lying.
Yeah, which one are you going to lie to? The police officers or your cellmate?
But the only real difference is the manner in which caused Debbie's death. But interesting enough, there is evidence that agrees with Evan's testimony that she died fighting off a sexual attack. A chemist hired by the Pennsylvania State Police tested hemorrhagic fluids that were extracted from the victim's vaginal and anal areas, and he stated that he found the presence of seminal acid phosphate in both areas, and that seminal acid phosphate is only found in semen. And remember, folks, this is all before DNA was
DNA
like it is today. So on August 5th, 1977, the court found Payne guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced him to life.
Good.
Payne has appealed this ruling many times over the course of four decades, and all the appeals have been denied.
Good.
DNA testing was unavailable when Payne was prosecuted nearly 40 years ago. Once DNA had come into play, Payne's so much time trying to get a judge to order a test. So finally, in December of 2014, the DNA was tested, came back. It wasn't Payne's DNA.
What?
But it was too degraded to say exactly who it belonged to.
It wasn't his?
They said it wasn't Payne's DNA.
Mm, okay.
Payne has filed at least six appeals because he states that because the DNA that was collected was not his DNA, he should be able to have a new trial and he shouldn't get first-degree murder.
But he did admit to it, right?
Exactly. He's claiming that the courts used the scientifically unsupported evidence that he raped Debbie as proof that he murdered her.
But her murder, her death came about because of him, regardless.
Regardless, exactly. And that's the whole thing. In 2017, the Pennsylvania Superior Court rejected the last appeal, stating that we recognized that the appellant may feel vindicated to some degree by this DNA evidence. Nevertheless, it does not prove, as he suggests, that he is innocent of first-degree murder, and Payne had never been charged with rape or any kind of sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
He was.
I mean, she did die because of him, so.
Exactly. So in prison, Payne has a blog where he proclaims his innocence.
Mm-hmm.
He has even stated that the man who told the police about the copper wire canned his statement, and that man was a former student of the high school, Strong Vincent High School, that Payne taught,
yes.
And his name is John Lacaris.
Okay.
Lacaris now claims he was in the Erie County prison the first few months of 1976 for burglary and theft. He was a suspect in the copper wire theft. And police said that he was also a suspect in Debbie's murder.
Did they test his semen?
No. The DNA was too degraded. They can't
right.
do anything. Lascaris also claims that a state trooper coerced him into saying that Payne had the wire. And Lascaris was to implicate Payne because Payne had hurt other girls in the area, and they felt Payne was the one who did it.
But he said he did, right? I mean, he did say he did but he didn't rape her.
But he was, Lascaris was the one that led
police
the
to
police
the
to Payne, correct?
Right.
So they knew Payne had, I don't know. I don't know how that works. But there,
I mean, I get it. He did, you know, it'd be different if he wasn't, like, he planted the wire and all that stuff.
As far as I knew, he didn't plant the wire, but I don't know. So, but anyway, interesting. Lascaris is serving a life sentence for robbery, theft, and the murder of 27-year-old Mark Allen Taft.
Hmm.
While Lascaris was in prison with a life sentence, they arrested him and put him on trial in 1988 for the murder of Cheryl Ann Lees of Middlesex, Pennsylvania. He eventually was acquitted, but here's something fun. Guess who the prosecution's star witness in this trial was?
The prosecution's star witness.
Saying that Lascaris murdered Cheryl Ann Lees. Guess who that person was?
I don't know.
It was former cellmate of Lascaris, Ed W. Edwards.
Ed Edwards?
Ed Edwards, the infamous Ed Edwards. He always shows up everywhere.
He really does.
And I know
he's not the
Zodiac
Killer.
Wait a minute,
how do they know those people? Like, how did that even happen? Now this whole case seems like it could be all not real.
I know. So Ed Edwards was the cellmate of Lascaris, and at the time it was in the, he was in for arson, and he was serving 5 to 13 years.
Ed Edwards was?
Ed Edwards was, while Lascaris was in for murder. And I'm not sure if Ed Edwards received any compensation for being the star witness.
I don't think they can pay you for that.
Well, compensation meaning he was paroled.
Time off.
He was supposed to be 3 to 15 years, and he, or I'm sorry, 5 to 13 years, and he was only in prison for 2 years.
For arson?
Right.
Hmm.
So, and you know that in 2010, he was sentenced to life imprisonment for, what, 5+ murders? And the first one starting in 1977?
He's blamed for everybody.
And he's blamed for everybody. And so when I first came across this, I'm like, oh my gosh, Ed Edwards, are you kidding me? How is Ed this? But yeah, I actually, there
was, is he from around there? I guess, is he from that area?
He was in that area at the time.
He happens to be in a lot of places.
Right. Remember, he was traveling all over the place. But yeah, when I saw that, I'm like, there's no way. But I actually looked up old newspaper articles. And sure as...
Wow.
Yep.
Well, now I'm rethinking all of this, kind of. So maybe...
I don't know. Well...
But he said he did it.
He said he did it.
The teacher said he did it.
But the teacher said he did it. But then, of course, you know, he says that he was kind of coerced. And you know how it goes.
Yes, I do.
Nobody in jail is...
They didn't do it.
Everybody is innocent in jail except for Red in Shawshank Redemption. He's the only one.
That's correct.
Anyway, so Payne is still in prison. He's 80-plus years old
now.
And it's not looking like he's ever going to get...
So he quit teaching?
Funny you should say that, too. As I was looking at other articles, well, the Ed Edwards thing, I did a search for Raymond Payne's name in the newspaper, and this article came up saying that how this town in Pennsylvania is angry, and this was in 1980, I believe, is angry that the school district hired a felon
to teach.
He'd served out his prison sentence, and I think it was some white-collar crime, I think maybe money laundering or something.
Right.
But the parents were extremely upset because he was a felon, right?
Right.
An ex-con. Come to find out, the article stated that back then, these people, that even though they had these felonies, their teaching certificates were never taken away. Like, at that time, Raymond Payne still had his teaching certificate.
Really?
Yeah. Along with another teacher who had coerced boys into posing nude and then publishing those pictures into gay magazines.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, interesting. And then
times
I went
have
to
a change, let me tell you.
Well, I went to investigate that further, I believe that that's been all straightened out now. So,
yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah, you would think so. And, of course, with more searching, I found there is a Facebook page that is called the Erie's History and Memorabilia page.
What's it called again?
Erie's History and Memorabilia.
How do you spell Erie?
Like the city. E-R-I-E.
Oh, Erie.
Like Erie, Pennsylvania.
Yes, gotcha.
And in one of the albums, it's titled The Murder of Debbie Gamma. I couldn't find the author. I couldn't find anything to verify these statements. The only thing that I could see that it was updated 2 years ago. So I'm going to read it to you.
Oh, no.
I want you guys to all know that the following is only hearsay. I'm not saying any of this is the actual truth. I'm not saying that it happened, but I'm only reading what was written on the Facebook page. So just take it all with a grain of salt. All
and
right.
Remember, if it's on the internet, it's 100% true.
Well, you know,
Abraham Lincoln said that.
Exactly. So I can't verify this, but this is what was written. Payne had been previously employed in Bradford, Pennsylvania by the city school district, where he resigned amid allegations of misconduct. But Erie school officials insisted that they didn't know anything about Payne acting inappropriate with students in his previous appointment in another district, or at that time, with the Erie school district, despite repeatedly receiving complaints about his behavior. And I will tell you one thing, the run-on sentences on here is just absolutely amazing. Okay. Raymond Payne was a predator and a pedophile who groomed his female students for sexual favors. Nearly every day during the school's lunch hour, Payne would place a sheet of paper over the window of his classroom door and draw the blinds over the classroom windows and began the molestation of his female students. Payne was unstoppable. Coming out of the era of the 1960s, Payne was considered progressive. He was young, and next generation of teachers in the school district where the majority of teachers were reaching retirement. The school district was not interested in the complaints made by the faculty of Roosevelt Junior High School, and parents were unaware of his activities. Debbie Gamma appeared to be a troubled girl who had problems at home. She was popular, always striving for attention. Her and Payne appeared to be close. She was one of the many girls who visited Payne during lunch hour. At the end of school year of 1975, Debbie and Payne appeared to have had a falling out. Debbie was very distraught about him, but wouldn't discuss it with anyone. Raymond Payne, 39 years old at the time of the murder, lived on a farm near Cambridge Springs in Crawford County. Cuswego Creek ran near or through the property. John Lascaris, a student at Strong Vincent High School, which is in Erie, was an associate of Payne's. While in Erie, Payne and Lascaris came across Debbie. Later, Debbie was at Payne's farm. While partying using drugs, Payne and Lascaris raped and murdered Debbie, strangling her with wire. Afterwards, they dumped her body, wire around her hands, neck, and ankles, in the Cuswego Creek.
Wow. That almost sounds more probable than allowing him to take pictures and it escalating
right.
to the...
But why wouldn't Payne implicate Lascaris?
I don't know. Maybe he had something else on him?
I don't know.
That would be, you know...
I don't know.
I wonder who wrote that.
I don't know. But it was weird because if you go on...
Is that Lascaris still alive?
Yes, I believe he is.
Hmm.
He's in prison. I think he's 57 now.
Hmm.
It's just a weird case. I mean, I'm pretty sure Payne was involved.
Well, he said
he was.
And
he's right.
So...
Right. Exactly.
But that, yeah, I guess it just sometimes...
But he swears by his innocence. He swears... If you go to his blog, he like actually has Lascaris, the redacted... The statements mm-hmm. that he redacted, the coercion and everything, I can't tell if they're real or not. They're just copies. I mean, they have been not notified.
Notarized.
They've been notarized, but I can't tell if they're legal documents or not. The whole case is just weird.
On his blog, does he ever mention this guy? But I mean, did that ever come out?
Like, no.
Did he ever say that he was involved in it somehow?
No. But if you go to this Erie history and memorabilia site, there's a bunch of comments on, oh, yeah, I remember Payne right after Debbie was murdered. He'd stand outside his door and say, oh, girls, you better watch out. There's a murderer out there. Better watch yourself.
That is so creepy.
I mean, he taught the entire next school year because she was killed right before school started.
And they already suspected him, too?
I believe so.
He
taught the entire school year.
That would never happen today.
No.
You're out as long as you're being investigated.
Right. Well, when I was looking up if to get your teaching certificate revoked, mm-hmm. they're like, even if there's one bad thing, you're asked to resign.
Yeah. I mean, you're with kids all the time.
Right.
It's terrible.
So anyway, that's the story of Debbie Gamma.
Poor Debbie.
Poor soul. Awful.
Well, I definitely think he did it, but I'm just not so sure it happened.
And I cannot believe Ed Edwards was brought up in this story.
Of course he was.
I'm not joking. I think this is...
We could probably tie Edwards to every single case we've done somehow.
Well, I think this is either the second or third time he's been brought up. I mean, supposedly with the Coleman murders, somebody suspects that...
He drove to Illinois to do that.
Right,
yeah.
But that's not... But still, yeah.
That was interesting,
that's
Jen.
Interesting.
Thank you. What are you going to tell the people today?
I'm going to tell them that I get lonely and I want you to DM me or...
That went south weirdly.
No, go. Since the kids are in school now, I have plenty of time to talk on Twitter at our True Crime Pod. Send us a shout out there. We'd also love it if you would boost our LPE, that's low podcast esteem, especially Camille, I feel so sorry for.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. To do that, you could either shout out on Twitter or our Facebook page, or you could even leave us a 5-star written review somewhere, anywhere, whether anywhere. It's Podbean, iTunes.
We'll give you a shout
out. The bathroom at the Shell station.
We'll say your name out loud.
Yeah.
It'll be great.
Write Camille's name down in the bathroom.
Absolutely. Yeah, put it right below Jennifer's that's mm-hmm. already been up there for 25 years.
Yeah, whatever.
And remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Oh, bye-bye.
Love ya. Now I forgot how to... Casawego? Casawego?
Casawego?
Casawego? Yeah,
that's
what we're going with. We're doing that. I think woodchucks are also called whistle pigs.
Is that
they
true?
Are. Yeah.
Is that a groundhog? Is that the same thing? Do you
no.
eat woodchuck? What do you do with that?
You do eat woodchuck. My husband's from Pennsylvania, and his family will shoot anything that moves, to be quite honest. So,
and
animals.
And eat it.
Yeah.
Ew.